Thanks, Laurel. I was thinking of when you said, what does faith look like? I don't know if any of the kids are still listening. Maybe one, two, my kids, are you still listening? Okay, what does faith look like when you think of the most common verse for children? Children, obey your parents. So the question is, and Laurel said too, you can ask God to help you to obey your parents. The question is, what is the second half of that verse, and do you actually believe the second half? Because that's the first command ever given in the Bible with a promise. So the question is, when we say, what does faith look like? Faith, and this is for adults too, is do we believe the promises that God gives? If we believe the promises, all of a sudden when we're thinking, I don't want to obey mom and dad, you go, wait a minute, it said that it may go well with me and that there's promises tied to this. Well, I want those promises and I believe God will give them to me if I obey. So there you go. That's what I was thinking of when I was thinking, what does faith look like? Okay, I want to continue talking about Peter. We talked about Peter Friday night. For those that were there, hopefully it is going to be maybe a little bit of a repeat, but hopefully there's still things there. Joel graciously sends out the email before and tells us what we're looking at. And so I read John 18, and I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but I will tell you there's times when I pre-read what we're going to cover Friday night, and I look at it and I go, you know what? This is going to be a good Bible study. There's lots here to talk about. And then there's times when I look at it and I'm like, I'm not sure what we're going to talk about for 45 minutes or however long it is. And I will tell you, Friday night reading John 18, that it was one of those where I was like, I don't know what's here to talk about for 45 minutes. And yet it proved out to be really encouraging, as I think the Lord was showing us things even while we were looking at it. At least for me, we're seeing things. I think 2 weeks ago or so, I went off for a week for work to a course, for a pretty intensive course, to a school. And the school, they take great pride in the fact that they're a case-based school. So you sit there and you study cases. You had to pre-read cases. And then you read these cases, and then you talk about the case, and you see what you can learn from the case that can apply to your life. And I feel like Peter is a great case study. So we're going to do a little Ivy School of Business type case study this morning on Peter and see out of this, I think, some of the things we already saw Friday night, but I have been pondering on it since then, so I wanted to talk about it. The start of Peter, it seems the very first, I'm kind of guessing on this, things aren't John is not necessarily written, the book of John isn't necessarily written in chronological order, but if you look at it, it seems the first interaction that Peter has with Jesus is in John 1, 40 to 42. And it's the time where his brother has met Jesus, John the Baptist. They are disciples of John the Baptist, and he says to some of them, hey, this is the Christ. And so Andrew, Peter's brother, follows them and then comes to Peter and says in John 1:40, one of the two who heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He found first his own brother, Simon, and said to him, we have found the Messiah, which translated means Christ. And he brought him to Jesus, and Jesus looked at him and said, you are Simon, the son of John. You shall be called Cephas, which is translated Peter. And Peter means rock or stone. And then I would guess fairly quickly after this is kind of how I see, someone can give me a different opinion on the ordering of this later, but let's go with it for now. In Mark, I'm just picking this one, Mark chapter 1, verse 16 to 18. Jesus, it says, as he, Jesus, was going along by the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew, the brother of Simon, casting a net in the sea, and they were fishermen. And Jesus said to them, follow me, and I'll make you become fishers of men. And immediately they left their nets and followed him. So Peter meets Jesus. Jesus changes his, says, I'm going to call you. I'm not calling you by your given name. I'm going to call you Cephas or Peter. And then they get called from their profession of fishing. He says, I'm going to make you fishers of men. And they follow him. And he doesn't say what that's going to look like. He doesn't tell them how that's going to happen. He just says, I'm going to make you fishers of men. And then you go on, and we know Peter was a pretty strong individual, it seems. And I just picked out a couple of passages, one actually that I wanted to look at. And we obviously, Laurel touched on one great one where he walks on water and then cries out for Jesus to save him. But in Mark 8, 31 to 33, I'll just touch on this one because I think you start to get a picture of the fact that Peter's vision for how things were to be was not aligned with Jesus' vision with how things were to be. And this is the first place we start to get a glimpse of it fairly clearly, right? And it said in Mark 8, 31 to 33, and Jesus began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. And he was stating the matter plainly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning around and seeing his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are not setting your mind on God's interests, but man's." It's so interesting. You read these things, you don't know what went through Peter's mind after he gets rebuked by Jesus. You're left to kind of wonder a little bit. But one thing we know for sure is that Peter's mind was set on man's interests and not on what God's plan was. And so that brings us kind of to the part we looked at on Friday night. Before we go to John, we will go to John 18, but I wanted to, and we touched on this Friday night, but Luke 22, I wanted to go here because it's kind of the same section, but it's Luke's account, and it gives a little bit more detail on things that revolve around Peter and kind of sets up nicely when we look at John 18, what happened and maybe something we can learn from that. So in Luke 22, verse 31, we'll start there and we'll read kind of 7 or 8 verses here, but it says in Luke 22:31, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat, but I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And you, when once you have returned or have turned again, strengthen your brothers." But he, Peter, said to him, "Lord, with you I'm ready to go both to prison and to death." And he said, "I say to you, Peter, the rooster will not crow today until you have denied three times that you know me." And then Jesus goes on. So then we're just going to keep going, but I'm pausing there because you have this thing. Peter saying, "I'll die with you." Jesus saying, "You're going to deny the fact that you even know me." And then Jesus says this to them. "When I sent you," this is verse 35, "when I sent you out without money, belt, and bag and sandals, you did not lack anything, did you?" And they said, "No, nothing." And he said to them, "But now, whoever has a money belt is to take it along, likewise also a bag. And whoever has no sword is to sell his coat and buy one. For I tell you that this which is written must be fulfilled in me, 'He who is numbered with the transgressors, for that which refers to me has its fulfillment.'" They said, "Lord, look, here are 2 swords. And he said to them, "It is enough." So they have this interaction about Jesus or Peter denying him. And then he says to them, "Hey, it's not going to be like it was. You know, before I said to you, just go." And basically the way I read it was that people would provide for you as you went, or I will take care of you, probably using people to provide for you. But now he's kind of signaling, it's not going to be that way anymore. It's going to be more hostile. And in fact, he tells them, "Hey, you should buy swords." And then they say, "We have 2 swords. He says, "Okay, that's enough." And so now when we go to John 18, you can start to see Peter get probably pretty confused. So John 18, let's pick it up in verse 10. They've gone into the Garden of Gethsemane. And in verse 10, now before we go here, it says, and this is something I didn't realize, Joel shared this with us, and it helped for me probably really start to put these things together. But it says when Judas came with the religious leaders that they brought a cohort of soldiers, and Joel was sharing with us Friday night, a cohort is 600 soldiers. And I'll tell you, I never in my mind had this picture of 600 soldiers coming to arrest Jesus. So keep that in your mind now when we read this. Remember, Peter has said, Jesus has told them, "Buy a sword," and Peter has said, "I'm willing to die with you." So now think of it, this is what he does in front of 600 soldiers. Simon Peter then, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's slave and cut off his right ear. And the slave's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to him, put the sword into the sheath, and the cup which the Father has given me, shall I not drink it? So never in my mind have I looked at that and thought, you know what? I think Peter was genuine in saying, I'm willing to die with you. Perhaps either that or he was thinking, I'm going to cut this guy's ear off, and then Jesus, because there's at this point, there's only 12 of them, including Jesus, because Judas is now on the other side. So 12 versus more than 600. And you just think very naturally, those odds don't stack up well for the disciples if this gets into an actual physical altercation. So I was like, wow, I think Peter was, like, he was in some measure following through on what he'd said. Lord, I'm willing to die with you. But this is now where everything starts to kind of fall apart for Peter. Because the first thing I was thinking this morning, I was thinking about this. What was Peter's thought? This is probably right there where all of a sudden Satan just comes in. Why did he tell you? He just told you to buy swords. Now he's telling you to put your sword away. All of a sudden you could just, in my mind, maybe it's just me, I could see this doubt and questions and confusion start to swirl in Peter's mind. And then it just gets layered on, because what happens next? Something that Peter never, ever, I don't think in his mind, would have envisioned is that Jesus is then arrested and taken away by these 600 soldiers. And so now things are just total, you could just imagine. So what happens is, now it says, I'm going to bounce around a bit because I'm going back to Luke 22, and I apologize for the bouncing around, but I'm trying to pick out the points where because some of this accounts of this give more of the picture of Peter. So Luke 22, Luke talks quite a bit about Peter in detail here. So we're going to start in verse 54. So now he's been arrested. It says, having arrested him in Luke 22, 54, they led him away to the house of the high priest, but Peter was following at a distance. So Peter didn't flee. Maybe he did temporarily just to get out of sight, and then he's following. And you could just imagine in his mind, there's probably a million things going through his mind. After they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter was sitting among them, and a servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the firelight and looking intently at him, said, this man was with him too, but he denied it, saying, woman, I don't know him. A little later, another saw him and said, you are one of them too. But Peter said, man, I am not. And about an hour had passed, and another man began to insist, saying, certainly this man was also with him, for he is a Galilean too. But Peter said, man, I don't know what you're talking about. And immediately, while he was still speaking, a rooster crowed, and the Lord turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had told him, before a rooster crows today, you'll deny me three times. And he went out and wept bitterly. And so you see the culmination of what Jesus had said was going to happen. But I was sitting there Friday night going, how did it go from the standpoint where he's willing to cut off this guy's ear and almost start the fight, so to speak, with these 600 soldiers, and really in a lot of ways basically kind of commit himself to be willing to die with Jesus, just like you said he was, to the place that he won't even acknowledge that he knew the man? Like, what changed? And we see what changed. What changed was things started to happen that were outside of Peter's expectation, outside of his plan. This was never in Peter's mind that this is how things were going to go down. That he's confused. Jesus said one thing. It feels like Jesus said one thing, and then he's saying another, and then all of a sudden he gets arrested. And everything is going opposite of how he would have expected. And then Peter's faith clearly is being shaken tremendously. And that's what it said. Peter, Simon, Simon, Satan has asked permission to sift you like wheat, right? How is he sifting him like wheat? He's just You probably just imagine the battle. And remember, the battle so often is in the mind. So he's just shaking him tremendously. So I'm not going to go through every verse. What happens after this? We know Peter leaves and he's weeping. And then 3 days later, him and John, I think it is, run up after one of the women comes and tells them that they've taken Jesus. They go up. They see that it's true. Jesus isn't there because Peter just runs straight into the grave. And then they leave, and this is Mary, I think it is, sees who she thinks is the gardener, and it's ultimately Jesus. And she comes back and tells them, but you don't get the sense Peter really believed it. And then even still, Jesus meets with them, I think, 2 times when he comes into the room, a couple times. But in the end, we get to John 21, right? So we still don't know fully what's going on in Peter's mind, but it says in John 21, verse 3, Simon Peter said to them, I'm going fishing. And they said to him, we'll come with you. They'll go out and go into the boat. And that night they caught nothing. So I just take this as he's kind of like, well, I'm just going to go back and I guess get back to work. Three and a half years he'd given up following Jesus, but now it's just none of it makes sense anymore. So I'm going to go fishing again and go back to what I know. And then we get to that familiar interaction between Jesus and Peter at the end of it in John 21, 15 to 19, where Jesus asks, I'm going to read this even though it's very familiar. It says, when they'd finished breakfast, so skipping past the part where they see him and Peter throws himself into the water, you know that Peter's, in his heart, he's just still longing for something, right? And you just see it by the reaction when John, they're in the boat. I say I'm going to skip it. I'm just going to paraphrase it. John says, it's the Lord. And Peter just launches into the water. Doesn't even wait for the boat to get back, right? So you still know that there's a longing in Peter's heart. While he's confused, he knows. Remember what Jesus said right before Peter rebukes him, I believe is the sequence. He says, but you know, Jesus is saying, who do people say that I am? And this is where Peter says, they say, some say Elijah, some say this, that. And Peter says, you're the Christ. He has the revelation. He knows in his heart. And then you think of the time in John 6 when Jesus says, you guys aren't going to leave also, right? Peter's one of them. And they said, where are we going to go? Like, you are the one that has the words of eternal life. Peter has had a revelation that Jesus is the Christ, that he has the words of eternal life. The problem is things in his mind seemed clear as to how things were going to go, and we don't know what that exactly was going to look like. Perhaps it was going to be Jesus was going to defeat the Romans, and there was going to be some type of great reign, and we don't know. But now it's just all, he doesn't understand. He's confused by life circumstances that aren't making sense to him. But he's still, in his heart, he's like, I still know that he is the one that has the words of eternal life. And so he launches out, and then him and Jesus have this interaction after breakfast. And Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, tend my lambs. And he said to him again a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, shepherd my sheep. Remember what he had said is, I pray that when you return, you would strengthen the brethren. And so now, even as Jason was leading the singing this morning, and he was talking about that song that we sang, you see the heart of Jesus Christ. You see in this, he says, I am, first of all, before he even went through this trial, he said to Peter, I'm praying for you that your faith fail not. And then when he comes, when it happens, and even in that moment that Jesus looks at Peter when he denies him, but then you see the way that Jesus is so gently drawing him back. He's not there to rebuke him and say, hey, why did you deny knowing me? There's none of that. He's trying to build his faith. Remember what I said to you, Peter, when I called you by the Sea of Galilee. I said I was going to make you a fisher of men. The only problem is, Peter, we had to walk some tough miles for you to get on the same page as me in what that's going to look like. And I had to strip away a lot of your own ideas and your own strength and all of these things and get you to a place that I can truly use you to be a true fisher of men. And so now he's calling him back. He says, I want you to shepherd my sheep. And he said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, tend my sheep, Peter. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you're younger, you used to gird yourself and walk wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you'll stretch out your hands and someone else will gird you and bring you where you do not wish to go. Now this he said, signifying what kind of death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. It's the exact same thing he said to him back at the Sea of Galilee. He said, follow me. And now all of Peter's confidence has been eroded in the sense of his confidence in his own strength, or even his confidence, I'll say, in probably his confidence in thinking, I have this all figured out. I know exactly what God's going to do. I know why he's going to do it, all of that. I don't understand any of that anymore. And so I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about, man, Lord, what are other examples in the Bible where you took people through that they didn't understand what you were doing or why you were doing it? And I just thought, man, almost every story we know in the Bible is a story of somebody going through things that they didn't understand. Right? I'll rattle off a few. Because I just start from the beginning. I start in Genesis. That one I'm sure you could dive into. I get to Abraham. Think Abraham, right? Just waiting. And then I got this figured out. My wife's giving me a great suggestion. I'm going to take my maid. And that's how God needs my help. Just like Jesus needed Peter's help, right? Don't worry, Jesus. I got a sword. I got this, right? And it doesn't ever. And then when it all gets cleared up for Abraham, he says, Abraham, that was never my plan. My plan was always that you'd have this son through Sarah. Then he says, okay, now I want you to kill him. Like, could you just, you just have to see it. Then you get to the Israelites coming out of Egypt, and he hems them in front of the Red Sea. And they just think, this is actually very similar to this situation. You've got this Egyptian army just pouring down on top of you. Right? Because God had to teach them. And then the part that I was reminded of this morning, you know, they go through the wilderness, and there's so many things that happen in the wilderness that they don't understand. What does Moses say? There's a verse that is, I remember somebody sharing with me many years ago, actually, I think it was through a book I read, but it says in Exodus 33:13, this is Moses talking to God. And it was at the time where God had said, I'm not going to, you can go in to the promised land. I'll send an angel. I'm not going. I'm so done with these people that I had chosen. And Moses is in a lot of ways almost, I'm going to use the word arguing. He's debating with God. But he says this one thing, and in there, you know, Moses says, he says, if you don't go, I'm not going anywhere. But this one, Exodus 33:13, he says, Now therefore, I pray you, if I have found favor in your sight, let me know your ways, that I may know you, so that I might find favor in your sight. Consider, too, that this nation is your people. Remember, what is he says, let me know your ways, that I might know you. I think Moses would had a revelation. Think of Moses' life, right? Moses, at the age of 40, we get an indication. What happened at the age of 40? It seems from something that happened, when Stephen talks about it, I can't recall where it is in the New Testament, but you get a glimpse of the fact that he had a revelation that at the age of 40, Moses seemed to have a revelation that God was going to use him somehow to deliver God's people. And that's when he goes and he sees this Egyptian soldier beating an Israelite, and Moses steps in and kills him. And probably in his mind, he thought, this is it. These people are going to see I'm here to save them. And in the end, he gets afraid and he flees. And he flees for 40 years. And he's guiding sheep in the wilderness. And you could imagine if he did have some revelation from God that he was going to somehow use him to take the people out of Egypt, I'm sure in those 40 years in the wilderness, that thought was gone. He was probably, it's like, I guess I blew it. And yet he doesn't realize that God is stripping him down and stripping him down to the point where when God says to him eventually in the burning bush and all of that interaction, Moses is like, I can't even speak, Lord. I can't. You got to find somebody else, right? His confidence has been totally stripped away. And I would say he lacked, we see the way he asked for God to send somebody else is not right. God was upset with him because he needed faith that God would give him the words. And then he brings Aaron, right? And then he sees, Moses sees all of these things. He sees the way God uses the plagues and how he takes them through the Red Sea. And he sees all the ways that they led them for this time in the wilderness. And what is, I think Moses clearly has a revelation. Lord, your ways are not my ways. I need to understand your ways, Lord. And that's where he's crying out. He says, Lord, I'm not going anywhere without you. You have this revelation, because if you don't go with us, how will people know that we're your people? But then he says to him, he says, Lord, I need to know your ways so I can know you. And in Hebrews chapter 3, we see, and it reminded me of this verse this morning, right? We see why God was upset with the Israelites. He was frustrated with them. He says there, I just cut and paste in here 7 to 11, but I think it'd probably be 8 or 9. He says in there, therefore I was angry with this generation and said, they always go astray in their heart, and they did not know my ways. As I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. He was upset with the people of Israel because they never understood. Why was it that they kept having to be hungry? Why was it they kept having to be thirsty? Why was it they kept having to go through these trials? He was trying to teach them things, but they didn't realize that. Their hearts were not open to realize he wants us to cry out to him and not want to go back to Egypt where we think we had it so good in Egypt, right? So he was upset with them. So you come back to the case study of Peter. I'm trying to maybe give you clues, pretty obvious clues into what I learned from this story. I was just thinking how it's so easy for us when things happen in life that are outside of what we would expect or that we don't understand, that it shakes our faith. It shakes us, right? Like, why is this happening? Why is this happening, Lord? I've seen it in my own life many, many times. I think of one circumstance. Many years ago, I wrecked my knee mountain biking, and it bothered me off and on, and I probably told you this, but I remember finally seeing somebody, and they said, you know, we need to operate. And I know, I happen to know the, you know, probably the best surgeon in Vancouver. I'm going to get you to see him. And I was like, this is great. Finally, this problem with my knee is going to get solved. And so I remember, and I was just like, wow, this is amazing. He knows like the best surgeon. He's like, yeah, I went to school with him. So I go out to see the surgeon, and he has a student working with him. And so I see the student first. And I remember actually having to walk the stairs up to his office and my knee bothering me just walking the stairs. And I saw the student first, and she looked at my knee, and she was like, ooh, yeah, definitely this looks like going to need surgery. And he walks in and he grabs my knee. This is the surgeon, walks in, grabs my knee, shakes it. He goes, it's rock solid. You're fine. You don't even need a brace. And I remember leaving, and I remember driving. I was crying in my car. And I remember just such a confusion. And like, Lord, I was really looking forward to this. And I was so, but I remember, Lord, I don't understand, but I trust you. I trust you. And I mean, it's a natural example. Today, many of you know what I enjoy doing. I've never had surgery, and I don't ever wear a brace. So the surgeon was right. But you know, it's those things that just shake you. And in the time, it was a big thing, right? To each of us, it's different. Someone could look at that and go, whatever, it's not a big deal. But in those moments where something happens we don't understand, the question is, are we at a place to be able to say, Lord, this is where, you know, we so often quote Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he'll make your path straight. It is an awesome verse. It's so, it puts our faith to the test, though, when you're in a situation you don't understand. To be able to say, Lord, I don't understand. Lord, I don't like this. Because that was my circumstance of the simple example I shared with you. I was upset. I didn't understand. I didn't like it. And yet I choose to trust you. And this is, like Laurel said, what does faith look like? This is actually a huge example of where faith can be made real or be proven to be lacking. When things happen that are contrary to what we're thinking, contrary to what we want. And the question is, can we trust him? Do we believe, this is also the time we say, if we all say, do we believe in the promises of God? We'd all raise our hand and we'd say, we believe in the promises of God. But then all of a sudden, when these things happen and it tests our faith, then all of a sudden, it's like maybe that verse pops into mind, but God is working all things together for good for those who love him. Can we say, Lord, I don't understand, but I'm trusting that you're working all things together for my good, even though it's different than how I saw this playing out. So that's what I look at when I look at Peter. I think, man, and then you see if we carry on in Acts, and when we're looking at Peter, you see the work that God does in his life, right? So often I said, Pentecost, how many were added? I think 3,000 men were added the day of Pentecost to their number, right? Through who? Peter was the vessel. Peter was a broken man now, and God could use him to actually do what he had always said, right? To become a true fisher of men. And to strengthen the brethren. He said, when you return, strengthen the brethren, right? He was there to strengthen the disciples. He was there to reach out to God's people and say, Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the Messiah that we've been waiting for. God could truly use him. And then when he was tested in some of the things, pretty quickly he got tested in the very thing he was unwilling to do, right? Would you admit that you know Jesus, right? When him and John, I think it is, get arrested after they heal the beggar, they raise him up, and then they say, they threaten him, all these things, they threaten harm, and what is Peter and John's response? It's like, well, you decide, should we obey you as men, or should we obey God? We can't stop talking about the things that we've seen and heard, right? All of a sudden, he had a confidence there. But it wasn't a confidence of himself anymore. It was a confidence. You think about to truly walk this life. Jesus said, my Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit. Every one of us would say, do we want our lives to be for his glory? And then we'd all say, yeah, I want to live my life for his glory. I think so many of the disciples, and we have to walk that journey too. Think of Paul. Paul had to walk this same journey of having all of his own strength stripped away and come to this discussion with God saying, Lord, this thorn in my flesh, whatever it was, he's probably sitting there thinking, it's hindering the work of the gospel. Maybe if it was a physical ailment, Lord, it's hindering me from sharing. Can you just remove it? He doesn't say it's hindering me, but you can imagine probably what's going through Paul's mind. So, Lord, this is just a nuisance. And yet Jesus is sitting there and says, Paul, it's actually helping the gospel because my strength is made perfect when you're weak. And so you see how these different, every every man and woman used of God, I think, has to walk this journey of having their own confidence, the confidence they have in themselves, taken away to the place where they can come to a place where say, I have no confidence in myself, but I have such a deep, deep confidence in my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. So it's not like then you're woebegone. You actually can have this confidence where people could look at Peter and say, these men have been with Jesus, right? Because they have such a confidence in their Lord and Savior. They found the source of true strength, even in the circumstances that don't go the way they're thinking. Things are not what they'd want. And then you come back to, there's so many passages you think of in Isaiah 55. And these are so familiar, right? Where it says, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. Or the passage in when Paul's writing to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 1, I'm not going to read it. It's a familiar passage, right? Just the fact that the message of the cross is foolishness to those that are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it's the power of God. That is the message of the cross, surrendering our will, surrendering our lives, and just letting Jesus Christ do what is best, even when we don't understand. I was thinking about sharing it this morning, and Lord, what is the primary takeaway in all of this? And I think now as I think about it more, I even said to Whitney this morning, she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm stewing. She's like, oh, that doesn't sound good. So I'm wrestling. I have this thing there to share, but what's the point? And I just see, actually, the point is so critical to our walk. And so important that we can come to a place where we say, Lord, I'm going to walk by faith and not by sight. And when my sight tells me things are happening that I don't understand, when my circumstances aren't playing out the way I want, when I don't understand whatever it is, and each of us could fill that blank in, because each of us could either say, today I've got things that are happening that I don't understand. I don't know why God hasn't answered this prayer. I don't know. That is where our faith, what does it look like to have faith? Come back to the simple question we started with, right? Is to be able to say, Lord, I don't understand, but I trust you. Lord, I don't understand, but I'm leaning not on my own understanding. I'm leaning not on my own strength, not on my own sword, Lord. I'm just going to learn to follow you. And like Moses, I'm going to cry out, Lord, teach me to know your ways. Lord, help me to know your ways, not my ways, Lord. My ways are man's ways. I don't want my ways anymore, Lord. I want your ways. Help me to understand that. And at the core of it, we know that God's ways are that we would learn to trust him, to lean on him for strength, to find our strength in him. And that in the midst of all of that, you can say all this and say, well, that sounds pretty, one could take the position, oh, that sounds pretty miserable. But it's not, right? This is part of then where we can actually, the Spirit in a life and in a vessel that's fully surrendered to the Lord and isn't any more moved by circumstance, then the Spirit can truly be working. And the fruit of the Spirit can be so evident where we can say, Jesus, what did he say to his disciples? He says, my peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you, not as the world gives. The world gives peace because I have no troubles. That's peace in the world, right? I have no troubles. But God gives peace that in the midst of our troubles, it's totally different. That in our hearts, we can have peace and just be at rest, patience, kindness. So that's the way I see it, right? That even Paul said to the Corinthians, he said, we have this power in earthen vessels so that the power would be from God and not from ourselves. That in the midst of it, this vessel is not crushed, even when circumstances are totally outside of our box. just being able to trust God and be totally at rest. And that's where, when we come to embrace his ways, what did it say? It says, they did not know my ways, therefore they will not enter my rest. But when we come to say, Lord, I want your ways, I want to understand your ways, I want to embrace your ways, even when they're different than my ways, then all of a sudden we can have rest in the midst of whatever the Lord allows, which is for our good, and we can trust him in that. So hopefully, in the midst of a look at Peter and seeing the way that the Lord worked in his life, that we can see perhaps maybe even now you could look at circumstances in your own life and say, Lord, you know what? I've been fighting you on this thing, and I want to stop. I want to just trust you that you are working this for my good, even if I don't understand it. And we can be strengthened now or in a future circumstance when God takes us through something, because he's always working for our good if we're willing to embrace it, right? Or we can just fight it. We don't want to be those that just fight God's working in our lives, but just to be willing to embrace it.